Hey everyone, welcome to this Tuesday episode of the Athletic Hockey Show. I am Craig Custance, as always, as I always am.
As sometimes you are Craig Custance.
Joined
dumping stuff off on Max Boltman last week, that poor sweet boy.
How'd it go? That's Sean Gentile. If you're not familiar with the Tuesday All-American episode, the Americans edition, where we focus exclusively on Americans and American guests like Travis Zajac, like Winnipeg-born Travis Zajac, who we claim as an American, I would say. He played college hockey.
College hockey. Plays for, in some ways, the most American of teams.
The New Jersey Devils.
There's something about...
America's team.
People are saying it more and more. We love the New Jersey Devils here, mm-hmm. here in the USA. But no, he is. He's honorary. College hockey, an entire career spent playing for Lou Lamoriello teams, basically. Other than a couple years in between there. What's more American than that?
Who's more American than Lou Lamoriello? Who I think he started Providence. I'm not sure about the mm-hmm. history, the accuracy of this. Started Providence.
Yeah, played.
Built the basketball program there with Rick Pitino. That's a pretty American. I think he won a World Series running the Yankees at one point. That may or may not be. So there's versions of this.
Yes.
Got the Nets to the NBA Finals, Jason Kidd.
Richard Jefferson.
Yeah. So, like, Lou Lamoriello is America. And the Devils, of course, are America's team. And so that by – and also I think the Devils tweeted this out. They said – with Travis Zajac, producer Jeff read it to us, and I'm not remembering it exactly, but he was born in Winnipeg but made in New Jersey. Is that what it was?
He's sticking around in North Jersey.
Is he? Is that what he decided?
Yeah. His kids go to school there. That's home for him now. So yeah, it was a great talk with Travis. He's a good dude. Like you said in the intro, I mean, we love... This is kind of Ryan Miller vibes from him, right? Where we get these guys at a transitional period in their lives, and there's, you know, they're happy to talk about it. It was a fun time despite a bad internet connection on Travis's part.
Yeah, I will say this: so you the listener won't have to worry about it because it'll all be cleaned up and sound great
spotless
by the time you get to it. But if you hear us referring to him powering through, it's only because we had to like call back 20 different times. And
yeah,
this is like you can always tell the quality of a human being. Like Travis was like, hey, whatever, you guys there calling back, like whatever you can, he could do to make this a good interview.
Jump through hoops, dialed some 20 digit dial-in number for Zoom from the Lambo in the driveway or whatever it was. He's a gem.
So definitely listen to that. Let's start here though, Sean, because my favorite time of year is right now, because it, like hockey, we're finally returning to a little bit of normalcy in terms of the ebbs and flows of the season. And we are firmly in like the prospect tournament phase, or, you know, coming out of it a little bit, going into training camp. And with that always is the RFA panic phase, where really nothing needs to get done all summer. So there's no reason for anybody to sign, right?
Yeah.
And people are at cottages, and yet we always get to this point where it's like, oh, these guys aren't done yet. Right now, you know, the biggest names, Brady Tkachuk, Kaprizov, Quinn Hughes, Pettersson, Dahlin, Robert Thomas. There's like some good RFAs. I have zero concern level. Where's your concern level on these?
I'm losing sleep over it.
Oh, I knew it.
What is Robert Thomas's contract going to look like? No, I think Brady Tkachuk is the interesting one. Again, I know we talked about him a bit last week, so we don't need to, you know, belabor the point here. But we heard last week, 8x8 or whatever it was, or 8x7, I can't remember the specifics of it now, or was on the table and probably going to happen soon. And here we are a week later talking about him still not having a deal. I think that's the interesting one, because that, from Ottawa, is the Godfather offer. They're giving that, like, that would represent top of market deal for him, where it's like you're maybe paying a premium to get him to stay in Ottawa. Let's be realistic here. And we know that it was offered, and we know that it hasn't been signed. So that to me is a really interesting thing. I mean, forget this season, just in terms of what it means you know, for the future of a high profile, still extremely young player. So I'm fascinated by that one. Kaprizov, we're just never going to have a resolution there. It doesn't matter how long it goes. I don't think so. We're just going to be talking about it again in 5 years and 10 years. Like, we're gonna be stuck in this time warp where the only thing we talk about each week is, you know, will Kaprizov take 5 years and $40 million or whatever it is. It's just a funny back and forth where it's been close and not close and now it's close again. But yeah, that's one to watch because he's great and it's the Wild.
What I love about that is there seems to be, you know, there's always the waiting game, right? When you have somewhat comparable players, you don't want to be the one that goes first. But then once that first domino falls, they all fall. And Drancer wrote a really good story today, 2 days out of Vancouver camp, what it means, reporting that I think Pedersen and Quinn Hughes are now in Michigan. I think they're in my driveway, potentially. I can't say that for sure. They're somewhere nearby training, sticking together, not in any hurry to get to camp. Theoretically, Kaprizov has the most leverage out of anybody because he's got the Russia situation. So if you're playing
even still, like that's like we can hear that it's off the table and blah blah whatever.
If it gets ugly again, you throw that back out there, right?
100. No, I'm agreeing with you.
I don't know why you're arguing this.
Whatever. You know what? Fist fight after the pod. I'm already mad at you. Whatever. No, that's always going to be there. That's always like the escape hatch there, right? That's the looming specter for that. And nobody else has that. That's for sure.
Yeah. So that deal potentially impacts the two deals in Vancouver, right? So if we're talking about timing this, if you're CAA, which represents Pedersen and Quinn Hughes, you're just sitting and you're waiting to see what Kaprizov does because he's got the most leverage. Yep. And he can, you know, he's coming off this great season. So he's going to set the market. And then you've got these other two that you probably want to keep in the same ballpark in terms of what they look like, right? You don't want one of those guys to feel like the other one got a ton more. Yeah. On some level, it's a mini version of what we saw with Toronto a few years ago when they went through with Austin and Nylander and eventually Mitch Marner. And I think Nylander probably didn't want – you know, if you're going first, you don't want to look bad and take less money, right, than the other ones are going to get.
It's a staring contest.
Right.
Classic.
Right. And so, but on top of it, you know, you're the Canucks and you maybe haven't managed the cap perfect.
So, not – could have been better with that over the last few years, yes.
So, I think that like – so – this happens every year. There's always the RFA holdouts. There's never a rush to get them done. But there's this year's version has a little bit of a distinct flavor because of the Russia-Vancouver pair more than anything.
If Kaprizov is the domino that you're waiting – like they're waiting for a domino to fall that might not fall. Mm. You know?
Like, what do you think? Is it Tkachuk or Kaprizov in your mind is the domino?
I feel like we have our answer with Tkachuk already. Mm. Is that crazy to say? This is complete reading tea leaves from me, but it's like if that dude was going to accept $8 million a year and it was on the table, he'd have done it already. That's not like a wait and see, like I'll get back to you in 10 days. If you're 21-year-old Brady Tkachuk who has an opportunity to lock in for 64 schmil until you're 29 or whatever and still be a free agent again, like he either wants it or he doesn't. So maybe that domino doesn't fall at all. And now you have Billy Guerin saying that they're ready to move ahead if they have to and they're disappointed and all that. Like we are getting into we're getting into sweating time here. And if you're Vancouver and you're just crossing your fingers and hoping that one of those guys gets done and provides the template, like you might be waiting a while. This is just speculation really on my part, but like you might see the Canucks guys setting the market whether they want to or not, because these other guys, I don't think you can write in pen that they're going to get deals done in anytime in the immediate future.
All I know is without if you're a player, the history shows if you miss a significant amount of time, and we're not at that point yet, it doesn't go well for you. Like that's like that's the other factor is you can try to squeeze every ounce of leverage you may or may not have, but if you start missing, if it gets into the season or you miss significant amount of time, that never works out. Like that season almost seems like a loss. Not to be overly dramatic.
It's hard to play hockey, and it's hard to jump on a speeding train, right?
Yes.
Like if you come in and you get a deal done, or you finally decide to report, and it's Halloween or whatever, like the middle of November, that's a big ask. So yeah, I mean, not to be alarmist, and you know, we could see one or all of these guys sign before this gets published, honestly.
Yeah.
But doesn't feel like that's happening, and it's starting to get really, really interesting.
Okay. The other part I like about this time of year is the veterans sitting on the market still. And, you know, we start seeing the PTOs and it's like the leaves turning colors.
Do you know how personally excited I was to see Brian Boyle hook on with the Penguins here? Oh, what a gift to the writers in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So producer Jeff threw a few names at us. Who are you giving a PTO or a look to out of Eric Staal, Bobby Ryan, Patrick Marleau?
Eric Staal.
Yeah. How dare you though, with Bobby Ryan?
We love Bobby, right? And I'd give one to him too, but like,
why not? You can't give them to everyone.
Buddy, this is my fake team. You get a PTO. Everybody gets a PTO.
Thank you.
Calling up, will Lemieux take a PTO? Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
But Staal plays center, right? And I know that he may have hit the cliff here.
I don't think he's in PTO territory, though, by the way. Maybe I shouldn't have phrased it that way. He's in proper contract.
I think it's one of those. He seems like one of those guys who it's like a quote unquote PTO, but like you know what the score is, right?
Yeah,
he comes to camp and it's like, yes, this is what we're designating it as, but we all know what the score is going to be at the end of that. Some team is going to need, you know, a completely capable bottom six era Eric Staal.
Yeah.
Right. And I know it seemed, again, we just said it, but maybe went off the cliff over the last year or two, but teams need centers, man. He's worth a look until he proves otherwise. So yeah, I'm taking him over Bobby Ryan as much as we love him around these parts.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a team that, you know, that can do the Red Wings thing with Bobby Ryan with one of these guys and just say, hey, we'll juice up your playing time and get you wherever you want to go at the trade deadline. Like that might be if you're a veteran player, that's maybe the move where you can assess the situation, go play on a team that maybe doesn't have high expectations, but you're going to get some ice time, have a, you know, establish yourself. And then you get to, at that point, say, hey, send me over to, you know, the Capitals or whatever. I think that's the move rather than trying to pick right now.
I'm interested. Also, and I mean, kind of same. I don't even know. Like, what is going on with Patrick Marleau? Like, is he going to do it again? Is he not? Like, is it sharks or bust for him? I feel like we've gotten some radio silence from him over the last little bit. What are the odds you think that it just kind of ends for him without any sort of, you know, fanfare? Like he really just runs out of gas and have we already watched that dude's last NHL game? I don't know. We might have.
Yeah, better career than you want to give him credit for.
Marleau, he's been a joy to watch. Honestly, I've loved watching Patrick Marleau. There's just something inherently fun about watching guys phase into the old man phase, the old man era of their careers. And you watch their games change a little bit, and you watch them use their brains a little bit more. And it's like watching old dudes hoop at the YMCA, right? Where they're picking their spots and popping. And I love watching guys do that. That's why Thornton's been such a treat over the last however many years. But so yeah, I'm all for it. But man, I don't know. Again, this goes for everybody. This goes for the RFAs. This goes for the vets we're talking about. Like, camps are opening, man.
Yeah,
like
that's the great news.
It it's here. Yes. And if you don't have a deal, it's fair to wonder now whether one's coming, at least in this first part of the season.
The best part, and my last favorite part about this time of year is when camps open and you're like, mm-hmm. and you're reminded where guys signed that you totally forgot, where they're like, 100%. You know, Thomas Tatar is in the best shape of his life in New Jersey.
Where is that again? That is where he is. He's in New Jersey. I love that. I forgot how much I like that deal for them, because it's a great deal. They need a guy like that. They don't have to worry about scratching him in the playoffs. They can just put him next to Jack Hughes and let him cook, baby.
You're being mean. All right. Well, that's a perfect segue for America's team to go into America's center, who retired, and Travis Zajac. Let's take a quick break and jump into that conversation.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We're thrilled to be joined by Travis Zajac, who is clearly in a better ride than Sean and I will ever own. Yeah.
That's better. Holy that's better cow. Than the better than the Impreza. Yes, better than a Subaru.
I'm very jealous right now.
Yeah, it's better than my first car too. I remember buying when my first car was like a Acura Integra, where the lights flip up. So I was pretty pumped to have that car. It was like a baby blue car. Took such good care of it, but you know, that was pretty.
That's a big feature with the flip lights, though, man. Did you have
huge? Like, what's that?
Did you have like a 10 CD changer that was in the trunk too?
No CD. Yeah.
What do you think he's made of money, Sean? Come on.
Yeah, come on. It was his first car. Let's go.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I always like when one of the lights doesn't work and it looks like the car is winking at you driving down the road.
It's the most embarrassing thing in the world.
Echoes of my aunt's powder blue Ford Probe that she was driving around in like 1995. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Travis, congratulations, first of all, on an incredible career. And we actually had Ryan Miller on right when he retired. We love talking to Ryan. And it's just fun to get people in this moment, right, where it's like, okay, now becomes the rest of my life. And I can already tell you seem pretty comfortable with it. Like, is there any anxiety or what are the emotions right now?
No, it's you know, it was an emotional day yesterday, I would say, but up until that point, I was at peace with it. I think I was ready for the next chapter, next phase. I kind of knew it. So I'm excited. Like I get to be around my kids a little more, take them to hockey, carpool, pick them up from school. So it's stuff I'm really looking forward to, stuff I've missed out a lot on. So besides that, I get to work on my golf game a little bit too. So that's that's a plus. But there's a lot of things I'm looking forward to, and when I look back, I really am just grateful to have played 15 years and have so many memories I'm going to cherish.
Mm. 15 years. I was looking. Do you know how many people in your draft class have played 1,000 games?
No, Ovi for sure, right? Ovi,
there's one.
There's got to be guys pretty close or there.
There's some guys knocking on the door, but there's only two right now, and we're talking to one of them. So that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's funny. I like to get really nostalgic when in these moments, right? And I like to get nostalgic all the time. I guess it happened when I turned 40 in the 40s. And so good luck. You have that to look forward to. And I love the draft year stuff. If I remember correctly, Devils traded up, right, to get you? Is that right? What was that whole experience like for you?
Yeah, you know what? I just going into that year, I was playing junior hockey. I had a really good year, but I had a feeling I'd get drafted. I didn't know where. I didn't think I'd be in the first round. But I guess as the year went on, I started talking to agents, and they're like, "Oh, you got to come to Carolina." And I'm like, "Ah, I don't know." We're like, "I guess we'll go." Me and my dad just went, so we're like, "We'll show up. We'll sit in the stands." And we're with an agent at the time, and he represented a few guys with the Devils, and mm-hmm. He's like, "Oh, you're gonna get picked next." I'm like, "What? Like, no way!" Like, I was sitting there in my, you know, Moore suit. I had my streaked hair. Like, I'm looking back. I'm like, this is pretty funny. But so I got picked 20th. They traded up.
Yeah.
And I just remember going down and putting on the jersey, standing up there, and it was just all kind of, you know, really a blur. But it was just I still remember that night, and it was a great experience. Just me and my dad kind of there, and then I think we, you know, after they had a kind of a draft party, and it was just me, because they didn't have any drafts in the other rounds, and so that was
the one person was, draft party.
Yeah.
So you were a one person draft class.
Yeah, for the first or second round, and we were just kind of, I was sitting there with Lou and all the coaches and the scouting staff, and I just remember Robbie for Torque grilling me with some questions, and I was really nervous about that, but like I said, just a fantastic experience.
So you're a one person draft class for Lou, and he traded up to get you. That's like
no pressure.
No pressure. Yeah. That's no big deal.
What were your first impressions of Lou?
Well, at the time I was pretty, you know, naive. I didn't know much about him, mm-hmm. about really mm-hmm. any of the general managers in hockey, to be honest. It's not really something I followed.
Yeah.
But you know, as you get more accustomed to what New Jersey's about, you hear stories, and you see the presence he has, and it's pretty intimidating, to be honest. I think when I was when you're younger, you just shut your mouth anyways and do what you're told. So I never really had any run-ins or problems with Lou, but you definitely feel the presence, you feel the of him around, and how guys, you know, react and act around him, and what his expectations are. And I think if you can manage all that, he's a fantastic manager. And he was great for me when I first came in, just to teach me what it took to be a teammate, what it took to be a good person, what it took to be a pro on and off the ice.
Did you know you were the first guy to sign a max length contract after the lockout? I saw that today. You were the first guy to sign.
I didn't know that, an eight-year
deal. So I don't know. It's just one of those things where we heard about it so much yesterday, you know, Lamoriello guy and all that. But I mean, that started out early on, right? Like you were tied to him in that organization for a long time from the jump. Like you set that kind of tone back then.
Yeah. You know what? Like I said, you know, he was the first guy to believe in me, first guy to, you know, really know what, you know, what I was all about and what it took to be a pro. So I have a lot of respect for Lou and what he brings to a team and the way he, expects an organization to be run.
What a lot of people don't know about that contract is there were 8 more years in the drawer that only you and Lou knew about. We can talk about it now, but yeah. It was actually a 16-year deal. It's funny. I didn't realize this till I was reading up on some stuff. So I grew up. My best friend had five brothers, and so it was five brothers was the family. And so I spent every day of my life there, playing every sport imaginable, and it like completely shaped me. Right, like that was we were the youngest, and we just would get beat up, and we learned how to behave on the football field or playing hockey or basketball. And I just project that on anyone else that comes from that kind of family. How much do you think that shaped you being in that scene growing up?
Yeah, for sure. I was in a hockey environment with three younger brothers, a dad who played college hockey. So, and then on top of that, being in Winnipeg where everyone only plays hockey, you know, right, in the winter, right. It's a sport for, you can play outdoors for, you know, 7 months. So, you know, that was great. My dad would take us to the rinks, you know, after school or on the weekends. And that's kind of where we all fell in love with the game, was on the outdoor rinks and, being with our friends, being with the family, playing 2-on-2 as they got older. So there was a lot of competition, and it was just great for us to get away and be outside and be active. And, that's where I really learned the game and like I said, fell in love with it.
How much of that is going to be part of your new gig with the Devils? I know that's sort of, it seems like it's by design, not all that defined right now, but like community stuff and in youth hockey and in Jersey, like, is that the play for you moving forward with them?
Well, I definitely, like I said, I love being around the kids and seeing their enthusiasm. And I think that's part of it, is growing the game in Jersey. I think even I've seen in the last few years, just being around, like I said, my family's youth hockey, how the game has grown mm-hmm. here. There's more and more teams. More girls playing, different cultures playing. So it's the Devils have done a great job of just expanding hockey in the state. And I definitely want to be part of that. Just like you said, knowing what it did for me as a kid, being able to be on a team, being around your friends, I think that's all important.
So there's a little bit of like lore, legend about how you ended up at North Dakota. So I want you to tell the story. There's the classic, you know, assistant coach shows up to watch another player and Travis, you know, catches his attention. How much truth is that? What was that like, that process like for you?
To be honest, I didn't hear that one, but.
Oh really? Yeah. I think there's like a Brad Berry went to watch somebody else and was like, oh, I need this kid, the two-way centerman or whatever. I don't know. You know.
I mean, if that's true, that's pretty cool. But, you know, I think the interest for me in North Dakota was just knowing how many good players have gone there in the past, the coaching staff, the arena was still one of the best arenas I've ever played with. So it was a good place to develop if you wanted to make the next level. Mm-hmm. I found good coaching staff, like I said, top players around where you're going to play with some of the best players. That was the draw for me. And also being 2 hours from home, I could go home, have a home cooked meal, get my laundry done. My parents would come watch me every weekend. So
that's nice.
It was a great school. Great hockey school. But you know, I had a lot of fun there, and I played with a lot of good players, a lot of guys who made the next level. You know, you see the success they have every year there and the players they get. So it's, as far as I'm concerned, it was the right place for me.
Were you part of the Jonathan Toews recruiting? Was that a thing?
I don't think I was. I played with him when he was a freshman, and I just look back at that team and see all like the skill, like some of the players we had with Toews and Oshie and Stafford. Mm-hmm. Joe Finley was a first round draft pick. Brian Lee was a first round draft pick. Like we had some guys, Taylor Chorney. We had, we had some really good players. Ryan Duncan was a Hobie Baker, winner. So it was,
crazy.
It's, the team we had that year was absolutely, it was
loaded,
really loaded. Yeah. So that was a lot of fun.
And great guys. Like, I mean, like to play with? Like, I mean, talk about like fun and to hang out with. I mean, Oshi, I can imagine, and Taves. Like, that's like great mix of like, we're going to get college, serious when it's
college.
In college. Like, I'm just
college. Sorry, college just, Oshi. Jesus.
College Oshi. Yeah. Oshi's one of the, you know, he's a happy go lucky guy. And you know, he's just a lot of fun to be around and probably one of the most skilled players I've ever seen. Like, we would play like a Canada US game every Monday, and he's a righty, but he would play like left-handed and be better than half the guys, you know, skill wise still. It's like, so just, you know, a lot of skill level on that team, and, you know, just, great 2 years there. We were close, but, you know, I think they went to the Frozen Four like 4 years in a row or 5 years in a row.
So we got the Oshi story. Is there like a young Taves story of him coming in as a freshman and, you know, wowing anybody or doing anything fun? Let's go.
No, like he was Captain Serious. He was the guy. If you wanted to get better, you go shoot pucks with Johnny, you go train with Johnny. He's always been that guy. He was been a good leader, a good teammate, always wanted to, always wanted to be the best and get to the next level. So, even like, cause he came in as a 17-year-old, I believe. He just always pushed himself, always, always wanted to, reach the next level. And you see, you know, where that's taken him. He's, you know, Stanley Cups, two-way player, one of the best probably two-way players in the game. So it'll be nice to see him, definitely see him back this year.
The one thing I was thinking about when we were scheduled to talk to you is I covered that Devils-Kings final, and that Devils run that you guys made in, was it 2012? They all blur together now. It was a fun run for you guys. Like, it was fun to watch from the outside. Great people in that room. What do you remember most about that run?
We were, I think, a 6 seed coming in. We weren't expected to do much, but
yeah,
you know, it's like anything. You make the playoffs and anything can happen. You get on a roll. And I think that was us. We, you know, I feel like the toughest round is the first round to get out of. And we went to game 7, game 6 and game 7, both in overtime, we won. So after that, we kind of got rolling, a little belief, and, you know, we win the next 2 series, and then all of a sudden you're in the finals. And I think, you know, we played a really, really good Kings team and kind of got down early, battled back, but, you know, didn't find a way to win it, but it was a great run, a lot of good experiences. We had a great team. I wouldn't say we're the most like talented team, but we were a really good team. And that's, you know, from the goaltending out.
God, there were so many memorable individual performances on that team. Like, whether it was you or, like, Henrik was going off and Kovalchuk was just unbelievable that whole postseason. Like, that was Bryce Salvador and Andy Greer. Like, that team, yeah. it was just every night it was somebody different stepping up. It was a blast to cover.
Yeah, no, exactly. You're right. Sal was awesome for us then.
Oh, he was so good.
He was great for us. Marty was great in that. And then, you know, you have Kovey, Zach, Patty, Ilyash. Like, we had three lines there in our fourth line.
I didn't even mention Parisi or Ilyash.
Oh, like, yeah, my by God. The way.
Like,
right?
Yeah, like, by the way.
Yeah. So it was, like we said, we had some skill, but we played hard. We Pete DeBoer, obviously, is a really good coach, and gets guys to play the right way and play hard. And you see the success he's had, in his career so far. So, fantastic. Yeah. Good group of guys, like friends on that team, lifelong friends. So, those are the memories I'll remember.
I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. Andy Green might be the greatest human alive. What a great dude.
Greener's a great dude. Probably throughout his career, probably the most underrated D-man. mm-hmm. I've played with. And I think that's why he can still play like now and be, you know, mm-hmm. be so successful. He's a great skater. He plays the game like in a rocking chair, and he's a great teammate. More importantly, he's a good guy to be around. He's funny, you know, mm-hmm. Plays the right way, unselfish. So all those types of things, greener in body. So, you know, probably, like I said, I played with him for 15 years, and that was, you know, he's one of my closest friends.
Was it tough to say no to those guys? Cause I know you said you talked to Lou about coming back to the island, maybe like you got him, you got Zach. I mean, like you could have had another little mini reunion there. Was that a tough thing to pass on?
You know, like I kind of knew where my heart was. I think it was always, it was always in Jersey. And, I think at the end of the day, I also, like I said, I also knew I was ready for the next phase. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to, you know, you don't want to play for the wrong reasons. I think mm-hmm. I've always enjoyed the game, but you know, when it starts, when that kind of internal drive and that passion and goes away, it's hard to, you know, it feels like a job, and that's not what I wanted to play for.
Most of all, I did want to thank you for your contributions to a fantasy league that I had in 2008, 2009. So this is like the crowning achievement of your career, obviously, is your four shorthanded points that year single-handedly won me like, you know, $300 when I was broke. Wow. So thank you. Thank you very much for that, man.
Okay. Yeah, those were some glory years back then. Yeah, exactly.
I think you owe him a cut, Sean. Don't at least a tip or something.
Yeah, the checks
in the mail.
The checks in the mail. Yeah, you can put it towards some upkeep on the whip there for sure.
Well, Travis, thanks for doing this. Thanks for powering through.
Thanks for the time and the patience. Yeah, it was awesome. I appreciate it.
No, it was awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. Anytime. So. I got time to hang out with you guys now. So
yeah, that's fine. Well, don't make an offer you can't follow through on, man. We'll be bugging you all the time.
Want to golf today? Yeah. What are you doing?
I'm 4 hours away. I'll be there very quickly.
Yeah. All right, guys. I appreciate it. Travis. Thank you for having.
Thanks again, man.
We'll see you.
Take care.
Thank you.
That was great. And I think, Sean, are you still there? Did you get in the car to go drive 4 hours to meet Travis?
Yeah.
He's like now we can hang out. You're like, no, we are hanging.
Seriously. Yeah.
I will get in my car.
The Impreza is going to be parked next to the Lambo at whatever course he's at right now.
Don't write checks
that your mouth can't cash, Trav. Let's go.
I loved his response to the fantasy thing. Like, what do you say as a player when you're like,
nothing. Okay, it's an idiot thing to say. It was a lifelong impression on me. I love that 2012 team, man.
It was fun.
That was so fun. And I'm biased, I think, towards them because that was the first cup final I covered. So I was like, oh, this is great. Flying back and forth between Newark and LA. But no, man, that was a treat.
One of the worst things I ever did, I complained. I feel terrible. I don't even want to tell this story. I complained to Johan Hedberg, who was the backup goalie on that team behind Marty Brodeur. I don't even know if I want to admit this. Oh, we were tired. We'd been traveling a lot in the playoffs.
What's wrong with you? I can see where this is going already.
We were exhausted. The media was exhausted.
Yeah.
And it was three. I think it was 3-0 Kings. And
we had that fake flight at the end of it. And I was just like, ruined everybody.
I'm like, don't extend. Do you really need to extend? I made some mm-hmm. kind of offhand comment to Johan about extending it because I didn't want to have to do another cross-country flight. This guy's playing in the Stanley Cup final to win the Stanley Cup. And I complained to one of the players. This is like the lowest of the low media moment for me. I'm going to say it. And he was like the nicest human. He was like, Craig, what are you talking about?
Legendarily nice guy, A.
Mm-hmm.
in someone who you've known forever, forever because of the Thrash stuff. So you're
just, I think that's why I felt like I was just, we're just standing and I'm like, oh, please don't extend this thing. We know this is like something like that. I don't remember what I said. And like,
what is wrong with you?
It was just a low moment. Edberg. That's what, I think that was his appropriate response from Johan was,
did you forget what team I play for? Right, I'm the one that's losing.
I regretted it the second it came out of my mouth when I saw his reaction. Yeah, I regret telling the story again. Now I'm bringing up these terrible memories. I was just, we were
in terrible shape. Drinking too much. It was
probably bad like times. There's so many stories from that series because I remember when it ended. Everyone was, I don't know why everyone was so gassed. It's like whatever we're doing is hard. Johan and I were just like literally playing for a Stanley Cup. Like we're tired from just going back and forth.
Said that and you physically tried to like grab the words out of the air and stick them back in your mouth, right? You're just like, yes. I need to rewind on this? Like, what is wrong with me? Yeah, I've had more than enough of those.
Yeah, so Johan, if you're listening to this, which I'm sure you are, I would like to formally apologize.
He's always in the comments. Johan Hedberg always complaining about us saying too much.
He's got a few suggested phrases.
100. He was the guy who said you got to stop saying 100%. Mm. So he's hearing this.
All right. Thanks, Travis. We'll be back in a second.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
We're back, and we omitted the biggest news of Monday. It's the Arizona Coyotes bringing back the Kachina jerseys as their primary look.
Oh my god!
For the season, we saw the. It might be the only good thing about that franchise, but we can just save that for another day. We saw the dark ones last year, and now they're wearing the whites. I love what they did with this because they took the logo, they updated a little bit, they cleaned it up. Actually, Chris Creamer at SportsLogos.net had a really good breakdown of the various changes that a weirdly iconic logo has undergone since 1995 or whatever it was. So yeah, they cleaned it up a bit. They gave the people what they wanted in at least this single way. And I'm here for it. Just wear them all day, every day. Give me a reason to watch the Phoenix Coyotes. That's close enough.
Phoenix Coyotes.
Oh my god. The Glendale Coyotes. Oh wait, never mind.
I feel like maybe the cynic in me is like they're pumping all the return of this, and I feel just like it's a big distraction from the train wreck. That's what I was. I don't know.
That's 100%.
I can't get excited about it.
So. It is No, I just aesthetically, I like looking at these jerseys, right. and it hits some kind of nostalgia button for me. This is Operation Human Shield in the form.
We don't know where we're playing next jerseys. Year. Bring back the
don't know where we're playing. Barely icing an NHL team. They have. The accounting on the hockey team alone is just wild. You look at cap hits versus money in, money out. It's a mess. There's no reason to watch that team. So of course they're like, oh yeah, by the way, don't look at the roster. Don't think about the arena situation. Just look over here. We have a new logo on our website. We have the Kachina head up top now. we brought back an old jersey and just like tweaked it a little bit. They didn't have, it's brilliant. They didn't even have to spend money on a redesign. They just straight up used an old logo and did some Photoshop fills on stuff to make the colors match. It's brilliant because I love it. And I fully realize how cynical and gross it is in a lot of ways, but also feed me that nonsense all day long. I'm an easy mark. Give me stuff like that, and I'm gonna just respond like lizard brain to it, like, oh, this is great, and I'm gonna ignore that, you know, they're gonna be whatever playing at a community rink next year.
Yeah,
whatever's gonna happen. The jerseys will be great though.
All right. I want to give my final thought here and just applaud Jonathan Drouin coming forward and speaking about his personal leave of absence from the Montreal Canadiens. I want to say it was 5 months ago, and just sharing his struggles in with anxiety, and you know, there was I think some insomnia, and it really hockey is, you know, for the hockey culture has just been celebrating, powering through every injury and toughing everything out. And boy, do I just give Jonathan Drouin credit for stepping forward and saying, hey, it wasn't right for me. I needed to surround myself with the right people. Because like, these are serious issues, and I can't imagine dealing with anxiety, and being, what was he, the number 3 overall pick. So arrives with white hot pressure. Then he's traded in a high profile trade to maybe the biggest, you know, outside of Toronto, then, you know, media market in terms of scrutiny.
And also, by the way, he's a French speaking player who grew up in the area.
That's right. So all you
just
have
to do is amped up times just, 1,000.
Just multiple, so just magnify everything. He never just got to like try to quietly develop as an NHL player somewhere. It was always like, Jonathan Drouin, is he living up to expectations? What's the, like, constantly, Jonathan Drouin was constantly in the news, I feel like. And now we know, on top of all of that, he was battling through this. And I don't know, I love that he shared that. He empowered others to speak out about it too. I mean, you never know with these things what the end result is.
Arpin Basu wrote a couple really good pieces on Drouin whenever all this, and I'm sure there's more in the works from him, honestly, but when all this initially hit, you know, 5 months ago, I think Arpin had a handle on it, contextualized it really well, talked about all those things we mentioned, just went in detail, did a really good job of, you know, setting up the situation that Drouin was faced with, right? And I think if you want a good read on this topic, and certainly more context or nuance that either of us can give in, you know, a couple minutes here, just seek that out, because it was really good. And again, it's by Arpin Basu, and it was published, you know, whatever, in the spring.
Breaking news, Sean. As we wrap up,
I see that. I know.
Bobby Ryan. Distracted.
Oh,
Bobby Ryan. PTO with the Detroit Red Wings. I think he must, somehow heard us saying, go sign with a team like the Red Wings. No one's going to believe that we didn't know this was coming in some form.
You know what's great? We can do the Bobby Ryan trade watch yet again next year. Yet again.
I can't wait to get on the Zoom and ask him about the trade deadline on day one
you
of
get,
his PTO.
You get another year of hanging out with him on Red Wing Zooms. Who loses here?
Nobody loses. This is great for Bobby Ryan and great. They spin him at the deadline, get a third round pick, just great asset management, wins
just
all
complete,
around.
Just true, like, perverse enjoyment out of watching Yzerman work the deadline.
Oh,
it's fun.
It's great. It's great.
And we're going to be there in like, whatever, 5 months now, 6 months now.
You're talking about the trade deadline?
Yes. We need to start prepping for this. You need to get your shit together.
Oh my gosh.
Start doing your trade deadline prep work, baby. It's right around the corner.
Sean, well, let's wrap this thing. Thanks for doing this. A sincere thank you. That last one wasn't sincere. A sincere thank you to Travis Ajak and producer Jeff for lining that up and for all the editing for producer Jeff.
Powering through, like you said. Good God.
quick plug, if you're getting back into the podcast space, if you're returning for hockey and you want to download them all, we have a nice suite of podcasts at the Athletic, on top of the Athletic Hockey Show. We got No Sleep Till Belmont. Laz and Powers have been doing it. Front Nationwide is the Blue Jackets. The Leaf Report, straight from the source. That's Mike Russo's fan. You don't like all these. You don't have to be fans of these teams to listen. You just have to like hockey and insight. All these are way more insightful than Sean and I. The VanCast, of course, and Les Support Athletique for our French speaking. Was it? How was my accent there?
It was close.
I don't know. Le? Is it Le? I said
not Le.
I don't.
There aren't two. Athletic okay. sports. Just the one.
Yeah, I was referring to Arpin and Mark Antoine. Oh my gosh. All right. Thank you for listening. And if you want to help us out in any way, I don't know why you would, but if you would, for some reason, leave a rating and a review wherever you're listening to this. Subscribe to The Athletic. If you're not subscribing, go get a 30-day free trial. And it's 99 cents a month. If you subscribe through The Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. And right now, if you go to theathletic.com/hockeyshow, you get half off a subscription to The Athletic. That way you can listen to this podcast ad-free, even if, like many people are saying, the ads are the best part.
most of all, see, you need to specify something here. If you're not going to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, don't bother doing it. The only one 5 stars, baby.
You can't specify the review. You can't say that. You have to leave it up to people's free will to leave whatever they feel this deserves, which is 5 stars, naturally.
If you leave a 4 or 3-star review, there will be repercussions. That's all I'm saying.